The Monty Show with you on a Monday, loaded as always. I'm Monty. That's Jake. Say hello, Jake.
Hello, Jake. Hello.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We got to talk about Shohei Ohtani on The Monty Show. Should Shohei start at AAA? Huge controversy in baseball today, thanks to the Atlanta Braves. Michigan State knew and did nothing about it. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about self-driving cars, the latest in NFL free agency, and, of course, a ton of NBA. Tyronn Lue is out. What does that mean for LeBron and his Cavaliers? We'll talk about all that. Follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Hello to everybody on Periscope today. They're watching this show live. You can as well. We stream it live every day right around 5 o'clock Pacific time right here on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Do you like that music?
It's okay.
Yeah.
We can do better.
We can do better. But the question is, can Shohei Ohtani do better? Jake, this is a big, big, big deal. And if you don't know who Shohei Ohtani is, Shohei Ohtani is an expensive investment by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Shohei Ohtani is a guy that I think has a lot of potential. They paid a ton of money to get him from Japan. He was a guy that you'll remember is able to pitch at the major league level and hit at the major league level, or at least that's how he was sold.
Yeah.
And he is struggling mightily in his first spring training with Anaheim. Do you send him down? Do you leave him at the majors? Jake, what would you do?
I would send him down to AAA. I would start him there because you want him to develop as a starting pitcher. You can't, the option of putting him in the bullpen at the major league level to me doesn't really suit him and their situation, because the reason you bought Ohtani is because, yeah, you wanted him to hit, but really with where their pitching situation is at, you needed him to be you didn't need him to be an ace, but it would be ideal. It would work out nicely if he turned into an ace caliber pitcher for the Angels. And so in my opinion, you need to send him to AAA, allow him to develop a little bit, allow him to adjust to the hitting level of Major League Baseball, and then bring him back. I'm not saying to send him down for the entire season, but I think, I don't know, 5 to 7 starts maybe? Let him get comfortable. He's clearly not comfortable, and he's clearly not pitching at the highest level he can possibly pitch. And so I think you just need to send him down for a few starts and bring him back, and I think he'll be a different guy.
Well, Ohtani is an investment. He is a long-term investment for this team. And remember, this Angels team is one that makes terrible investments. We can talk about C.J. Wilson. We could talk about Albert Pujols, Hamilton, like all of these guys. Mo Vaughn, you could go all the way back to Mo Vaughn falling down the dugout steps when he came over from Boston. Like, I mean, just not really good results for tons of money spent. I think you have to look at Shohei Ohtani in the long, long term.
Yeah.
And that to me means if he's not comfortable, send him down to AAA. The other problem that I don't like with this decision is it's up to him. I would say it sounds like 70% it's up to Ohtani. What happens with his development?
Right.
They've really given him the keys to the car. They're allowing him to drive, which I think is a terrible idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's not conducive to the Angels to allow a 23-year-old player to control where he's at in the franchise. And I understand that it seems to me now more than ever that they sold him on, hey, we're going to keep you in the Major League Baseball no matter what happens here. If you struggle out the gate, we'll keep you up here and we'll just deal with it. And I don't think that was smart by them. Now, they got the talent, but it begs the question, did he go to the Angels because he needed that guarantee that he would stay in Major League Baseball?
Did he go to the Angels because I'm stunned he's not an L.A. Dodger?
Yeah.
The Dodgers wanted him?
And I think a lot of people are stunned.
But what do you make of that? Could he not handle the bright lights of the L.A. Dodgers?
I think that's part of it. I think Ohtani wanted to go somewhere where, one, he could be considered one of the best talents on the team. He wouldn't have been that for the Dodgers. He would have been a great talent for them, but he wouldn't have been the best pitcher on the team. And I think he's close to that talent-wise now with the Angels. I also think that he didn't want the pressure to win right out of the gate. The Dodgers are a franchise that prides themselves on being in contention every single year. And they have been in contention every single year for a few seasons now. And so I think for Ohtani, it didn't make sense to go there. Why didn't he go to any other winning organization? He didn't want the pressure to win. He wanted to go somewhere like the Angels, where, in my estimation, based on their performance over the last decade, it's okay not to strive to be the best you can possibly be every single year. It's okay to barely get into the ALDS or to lose to the Rangers in a wild card game, let's say, or any of those situations. It's just okay to be okay. And I think that's where he wanted to be.
I think it's much more difficult. I think there's a lot more pressure and expectations on a Dodger than there is an Angel.
Yeah.
I think if you want to go to Southern California and play baseball, but don't want pressure, you pick the Angels. And I think the real issue here is that Ohtani's just not ready to be a major leaguer yet. The talent is clearly there. The Rockies pounded him the other day for 7 runs. And what did Arenado and Desmond say? He's got great stuff. He doesn't have great location. He's got major league stuff, but he's not refined enough to be able to locate that. And in Japan, when you're middle 90s and up, you can miss down the middle of the plate and blow guys away. In Major League Baseball, guys like Ian Desmond are going to drive that ball 400-plus feet.
95 is every day.
And Arenado hit a ball out of Tempe Diablo Stadium that was knee-high on the inner half. That's batting practice for major leaguers when it's straight. And here's the other thing you've said 100 times, and I wonder your thoughts on it. You saw an example of this. You've always told me Ohtani is straight with his fastball.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how hard you throw that.
It's true.
I don't know that you can put bend in a guy's fastball. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, you're right, is natural. The word is pronation. So when you're, as a right-hander, when you throw the baseball, when you throw a fastball, if your wrist turns in a little bit or pronates, the ball is going to tail towards a right-hand pitcher. Now, Ohtani clearly doesn't do that. He clearly just finishes straight down.
Yes.
Which is why he gets tremendous backspin on his fastball, but it's also why his fastball is straight as an arrow and very easy to barrel up. And I think part of this development and part of this decision, whether he should go to AAA or stay at the major league level, is his mental toughness. Can he survive the Ian Desmond home run mentally? The Ian Desmond home run was a moonshot. I mean, that was one of those home runs that was really loud. It was a no-doubter. You knew it right away. And I think Ohtani knew it right away. I mean, when you're asking for the baseball, right, without even turning around, you know it's
gone. Before Desmond gets
to
first base?
I've done it personally. I mean, you know that ball is gone. So for him mentally, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge.
What does that feel like? When do you know that ball's going for a ride? Is it when it leaves your hand? Is it the crack of the bat?
Well, you know you're in trouble when it leaves your hand. There's just some pitches you know, all right, I threw that. I know I'm in trouble. And then when he squares it up like that, you can just ask for another baseball. It's not coming back. And I think some of that
is it the sound? Is it?
As a pitcher, you know where you shouldn't throw. He knows that he doesn't want to be right down the middle. I think he knows that. And I think he knows he's pitching to better hitters. You can't tell me he doesn't recognize that at this point. So I think when you throw that ball where he threw it, right down the middle, I would say thigh high. I mean, that's Ian Desmond's paradise. That's where that guy lives.
Oh, he crushed that ball.
You know, and so I think Ohtani knew it. And there's no worse feeling, but I think what's more important is that he's able to bounce back from that.
My thing on Ohtani right now, and it's March 19th, we're 10 days away from opening day.
You got to keep that in perspective. That's a good point.
It's March 19th. We're 10 days away from opening day. He's in the middle of his first spring training. He's a AAA pitcher and a AAA hitter right now. He's not hitting at all, and I think a lot of that is because his pitching is failing. I still don't buy into the idea that this guy can be an every fifth-day starter in a DH when he's not. I just don't think that's possible. I watched Ricky Ankiel. When I was in St. Louis, I watched him convert from a pitcher to a hitter, and the hitting part was really, really difficult. As much as Rick Ankiel struggled to pitch, learning to hit was really difficult for him. Rick Ankiel will tell you the outfield was easy. He could run gap to gap, no problem. Rick Ankiel was a great athlete. Ricky could not learn to hit that fastball. It took him almost a full season to consistently hit fastball slider. And once he learned to do that, he was a regular contributor at the major league level. I think Ohtani's got to learn that I need more bat speed. This is not easy. I'm not in Japan anymore. This is the major leagues, because Japanese baseball is double A low-end AAA, AA baseball.
Sure.
And I think that's what Ohtani's struggling with. I think it's really hard to be a Major League Baseball pitcher or a Major League Baseball hitter. To do both at the same time, I still don't believe that that can happen.
Well, and I think there's a reason you haven't seen a lot of guys from overseas come here and do it. I think that speaks to just how talented Major League Baseball is and how high of a caliber of a player you're dealing with, both mentally and physically. These guys are not... you know, maybe taking care of themselves. These guys are eating at the highest level. They're training at the highest level. They're getting everything they need to be successful on the field. And you add that to their natural God-given ability,
yeah,
you're dealing with the best baseball players on the planet, bar none. Like, it's not even a conversation. So
his MVP numbers, and this is something else I think we need to talk about. His MVP numbers in Japan are not mind-blowing. He was the MVP of the best league in Japan, with 22 home runs and hitting .322 with a 1.86 ERA and 140 innings pitched. His dominance on the mound and at the plate led to only this tiny little euphemism nickname. They called him the Japanese Babe Ruth. And those numbers are not Ruthian.
I mean, we're talking about 140 innings. I mean, that's
it. 140 innings.
170, in my opinion, is the minimum for a starter. And most starters who are at 170 are mid to low end starters. Yeah. I mean, look at the numbers. You know, so I think if you want to be elite in this game, you got to get to 180, 190, and 200 is really the benchmark for guys like Kershaw and Chris Sale and Bumgarner. You know, those guys. The Babe Ruths of Major League Baseball are at the 200-plus inning mark.
I think they want to win in Anaheim. I just don't think there's just Shoemaker. We've seen pitch twice this spring.
They have average pitching.
That's it. They're going to hit. They're going to bang. Because the good Upton brother plays there and he can hit. By the way, Melvin Upton today got released. It is what it is. That division and baseball on the whole is becoming mediocre. There's not a lot of meat on the quality bone. Yeah. I think there's some teams that are worthy. And we talk about them almost every day on this show. The Cubs, the Astros, the Yankees this year. I've been so impressed with the Yankees, although they're going to have to show that they can pitch a little bit. But I've been so impressed with the way the Yankees lineup has intimidated pitchers. I think there's a real chance for Judge and Stanton to combine. I don't think it's 100. I think it's 90 home runs.
I think both of them will eclipse 40 easily.
I'm not buying that, dude.
I think they will.
I'm not buying that.
I mean, the American League pitching has to improve. And
I could see Mike Stanton hitting 50 home runs, and I could see Judge hitting 40. I can't believe that those two guys are going to hit 50 and 50. I think one of those guys getting to 40 is likely. I don't think two of those guys getting to 40 is likely. Now, I could see somebody else in that lineup doing it, and who knows what that looks like.
Right.
But I could see a Sanchez having a breakout year. You know, a Greg Bird, if he stays healthy, and I'm not promising you or saying he will,
right.
I could see Greg Bird doing that. But who in their right mind is pitching to Judge and Stanton? If I am a major league manager, I'm never letting them go back to back. It's not happening. One of them's getting hit or one of them's getting walked. It's that simple. I look at the rest of that lineup, and if it is Gardner, Judge, Stanton, and Sanchez, you're in for a world of hurt. I mean, I got to think that Giancarlo Stanton has a .430 on base percentage.
Well, I think the biggest challenge is that I agree you can't allow both of them to beat you. You can't allow them to go back-to-back. That will happen many times this year, but as going into the series, into the matchup, you got to have the mindset that you're not going to allow both of them to beat you in the same inning. And so
It's going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. There's no doubt about that. But my point is I think strategically you got to figure out, okay, well, I can't put guys on in front of both of these hitters. So, you know, whoever they're going to hit leadoff, okay, you got to get him out. Judge is going to hit second, presumably. That's what they've been doing.
Yeah.
So if he doubles, let's say, then you're facing Stanton. You're going to walk Stanton? Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, but you realize it's Gary Sanchez. How about
Didi
Gregorius?
But I'll take my chances with Gary Sanchez. You can get Gary Sanchez out.
He's going to hit 35 home runs then.
I'm with you on that. Gary Sanchez is hitting 35 home runs, Stanton and Judge better hit at least 45.
I think one of those two gets pitched around on a regular basis. And my guess is it's going
to
be Stanton.
It has
I think
to be.
You can get yeah. Judge is far less the refined and experienced player that Giancarlo used to be. Mike Stanton is, and I look at the rest of that lineup. I'd rather pitch to Gregorius, Hicks, Bird. Neil Walker's the real X factor because I could see Neil Walker sliding up into that two hole and moving everybody down.
Which I'm an advocate of. I'm not a huge fan of Judge hitting second. I'd much rather see them 3 and 4 in the lineup, but.
I want Giancarlo Stanton hitting with guys on base. I want Judge hitting with guys on base. And Walker, Brandon Drury,
you don't need him to hit. That's
there's
the going to
be very little pressure on him to perform. So I think he's probably going to have a 300 on base percentage, which if you're the Yankees, I think you're jumping up and down while you wait to bid on Machado if Drury has a 300 on base percentage. But that lineup, any way you slice it, that lineup is set and ready to rock and roll. And it's simply a matter of health and whether or not Luis Severino can win you a lot of games. Because Tanaka, Sabathia, Sonny Gray, and Jordan Montgomery don't enthuse me at all.
Yeah, I mean, you need Severino to perform. The nice thing is going into the season, you know your bullpen's loaded. And I think
although Batances has had an interesting spring,
he has. But I don't second guess those guys.
Man, Chapman, Robertson, and Batances 7, 8, 9.
Savage, dude. Good Lord. It's a 6-inning game. It's
right?
That simple.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're going to be really good. What do you make of Boston, though? See, we've spent the entire spring, I think, because of Judge and Stanton. I think we've spent the entire spring not talking about the Boston Red Sox, and. They're still going to be formidable. Your boy David Price, or at least the guy that used to be your guy, David Price, he's somebody that seems to have had an epiphany mentally. I don't know what that is, but he's not trying to be the alpha dog anymore.
Well, and I think he needed to do that 2 years ago, and I'm happy he's doing it now. I mean, for his sake, I think now he's getting to a point in his career where he realizes time is running out. I'm not saying David Price is old, but what I am saying is he can see the end coming. It's in his future. So I think he realizes that I need to make a mental change here. If I want to keep pitching and finish out my career 3-4 years from now, I got to be able to pitch better in the playoffs. And that's been his biggest crutch or negative trait. He can't get it done in the playoffs. So for him, being that his velocity is down, it's low 90s instead of high 90s, he needs to pitch to location, just like CC Sabathia has done. If he can do what CC did, he'll be fine.
Sale, Price, Porcello, Brian Johnson, and Hector Velasquez.
Okay. I mean, Price is a nice name, but he's not that ace quality. Chris Sale obviously is Chris Sale.
Yeah.
But he still failed you in the playoffs. But here's the question, and I kind of hinted at this going into the playoffs this past year. He'd never pitched in the playoffs, and I think there were a lot of guys this past postseason who had never pitched in the playoffs, and we saw that. And so I think this time around, if they can get deeper into the playoffs and get by the Yankees, let's say, I think they will be a much better team this time around.
Sale and Price got to be under a 3 ERA.
Yeah.
Because if they're 3.5-4 ERA, they're not going to win. The Yankees. The Yankees have too many bats.
I think the AL East is loaded offensively, though. There's so
many
guys.
It is. There's no doubt it is. But that's why I said I think they're it's a little. But how many of those teams are the Yankees truly elite, or can they just rake? I think they are going to rake. I don't think they're going to be a great baseball team,
right?
Because they're going to struggle on the mound for long stretches, I think. I can say the same thing about Boston. I think Boston's lineup, nobody talks about the fact that Betts, Benintendi, and, you know, Hanley Ramirez can't have much left. You know, Andrew Benintendi, I think, is a nice young player. He's there. Betts is there. J.D. Martinez, and we've had this discussion ad nauseum talking about the Diamondbacks and what they'll miss out of him. I don't know what to expect from J.D. Martinez. He's going to get a lot of time not being an outfielder, which should make him a better hitter, one would think.
And he was upset by that.
He is upset by that, and he's worked really hard, he claims, in the offseason, now that he finally passed the Boston physical. I don't know what to make of them. But anyway, I know they're going to hit. Martinez, Bogarts, you know, think about even Nunez and Jackie Bradley Jr. And they're going to hit, but they're not elite on the bump. So I look at that division. The Central is a lot more interesting to me. What are the Chicago White Sox going to be? As a Cup fan, I hope they never win another game in the yeah. entire existence yeah. of the ball club.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, they're actually hitting, and Yan Moncada is a really good prospect who is actually now, in my mind, ready to hit. And, you know, you look at Avisail Garcia and Jose Abreu, and they actually have guys in their lineup that can do the job. Tim Anderson is, in my opinion, a great shortstop, and I hope that he thrives and continues to grow, but they're not ready to pitch yet. James Shields is their opening day starter, right? Cleveland should win that division in a walk.
Yeah.
I would guess, because, again, I'm not the guy who believes in the Twins. Are you a Twins guy?
I'm a guy who believes the Twins are suffering from PED use. I think that there's their shortstop got suspended 80 games, man. I mean, how's that going to happen? You're telling me you're starting shortstop? Got yeah. suspended 80 games, and you think that you're going to contend? I don't buy it.
Huge
because you know what that means? If your starting shortstop got caught with that, how many other guys in your locker room are doing it? And I'm not trying to degrade them as an organization, but what I am saying is health-wise, when you get caught with PEDs, you can't tell me Major League Baseball is not putting you under a microscope.
Yeah.
And so in my opinion, I do think they'll have one or two more violations this year. And
Polanco,
80-game
suspension.
I think it'll hurt them.
Yeah, and again, that's a team that I think is going to likely struggle with depth. And when you sign Lance Lynn that late in spring training, and you're expecting him to be a core piece of your rotation. Anyway, this just goes to prove my point that I am not at all sold that there's a ton of depth in Major League Baseball this year.
Yeah.
I think there are some good teams. I think there are very few great teams. I think the Cubs, I think the Nationals. I still am not a believer in the Dodgers, and I know that we talk a lot about that NL West. I think the Dodgers haven't gotten better. And I look around the NL West, and I think to myself, well, San Diego's better. Colorado's not better, even though they got Cargo back today. Colorado's not better. The Dodgers aren't better. The Diamondbacks aren't better.
But the Dodgers are still a good team. Even though they're not better. And I know the Giants have improved and they've gotten better. But the Giants had a lot of improving to do. So in my opinion, the Giants caught up.
And they don't have pitching.
Yeah.
They are going to struggle to get guys out.
Yeah.
So this is by default. I think the three best teams in the West, oddly enough, I think San Diego is the third best team in the West. I'm not a Colorado believer. They don't have pitching. John Gray is not a star.
No.
The Arizona Diamondbacks don't have consistent pitching. Zach Greinke today, it was announced, will not be the opening day starter. It's likely to be Robbie Ray, who I still think is their best pitcher and has been, at least for the last year. Robbie Ray is going to be their opening day starter. So you have all this talk about how great baseball teams are. There are four or five great baseball teams.
Yeah.
And if I said to you today, who's the best team in the American League?
It'd still be the Astros.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Altuve signed his contract today. I mean,
they got a lot better these last 10 days. You got Altuve extended. You got Garrett Cole. You've got Justin Verlander.
Just looks so good.
I mean, he needs to. Again, he had good days with the Pirates, but he also had really bad stretches. And so for me, I think.
Well, they were not a good team.
I know they weren't. But at the same time, great pitchers can still dominate on an average team.
Yeah, Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Correa. Like I'm going through that lineup. Gattis can be a DH.
Yeah, they're deep.
McCann. I mean, the problem is again going to be like Dallas Keuchel is a perfect example. Dallas Keuchel's a guy who's got to figure out if he's a stud or not, because I don't know what Dallas Keuchel looks like. I'm not sure. Is he again? My bar is anything. 3-2-5 and below, you're elite. You're a really good pitcher. He strikes me as a 3.5-3.75 ERA guy. And I don't put Dallas Keuchel into the elites. I want to see a guy like Lance McCullers cut a quarter run off his ERA. I want to see guys like Garrett Cole and Charlie Morton. They have a ton of potential in that rotation. And I actually think their bullpen's pretty solid. Ken Giles is a good closer. So I think they're the best team in the American League by far.
Yeah.
And I think it's all National League. I think that the National League is the Western Conference of the NBA. I think all of the top end of Major League Baseball, the Cubs, I want to say the Dodgers, but I don't put the Dodgers.
They're not one of the best.
I don't put the Dodgers with the Cubs and the Nationals. I think the Cubs and the Nationals, and the Brewers are really interesting. I think the Brewers are going to be a pain in the ass.
There's no way they should win the division, but I think they put up a big time fight.
It's going to be really close. It's going to be San Diego.
But I don't think the Brewers are an 85 win team, in my opinion. Maybe they're not 90 wins.
I think they'll be 85. Because I could see him winning 87, 88.
I think the Cubs are projected at like 98 wins or something ridiculous. I would put the Cubs between 93 and 96. And I think the Brewers are an 82 to 86 win team. I think they're in the mid-80s.
I think the Cubs are good enough to win 100 games.
They are, but do you know how hard that is to do? Both mentally, physically staying healthy. Yeah.
But that pitching staff, man.
If it can stay healthy. I mean, I know Hendricks has a lot to prove because he does.
I don't think he does.
I think he does.
Man, what does Kyle Hendricks have to do with
this? He's got to prove that he can handle it over the entire year. He did it for one season, and he had one great postseason outing.
Kyle Hendricks doesn't have anything to prove. I disagree. I think Kyle Hendricks is a guy who's been fantastic in the postseason. He is somebody that's, you know, he's an all-star now. He was damn near the Cy Young Award winner. He's established himself. Now, he is very good. Are you saying that you want to see him be great? Because I'd love to see him be.
One of their guys. He needs to be elite. Now, they paid him, and now they're asking him to pitch to that level.
Is he their second-best pitcher right now? Because Yu Darvish... I think Yu Darvish has completely blown me away.
Dude,
I'm surprised at how good he looks.
In the regular season, but I'm just telling you, I can't. I will not back him in the postseason until he proves it.
And Darvish.
Yeah, Darvish. Yeah. Hendricks has proven himself.
Yeah, Darvish is going to be fantastic. I think their second best pitcher right now is Kyle Hendricks. I think their third best pitcher is John Lester. I will say that I'm wrong about Jose Quintana because he's had an unbelievable spring. He was great in Vegas over the
weekend. I'm not ready to say you're wrong about him. I think he's had a great spring. And again, I think he needs to prove it. Last season, I listened to you all year long, rip the guy.
He's
super inconsistent. He gives you good outings and then he gives you clunkers.
He's the Hall of Very Good.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was trying to say, too. You know, he doesn't get... He's not over the top excellent.
He'd be a number one on all of these teams.
He'd be a number one on the White Sox.
The Angels, the Rockies, the Diamondbacks. Like, he'd be an ace on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
But the Cubs have 100 win expectations. He wouldn't be an ace with Washington.
No.
He'd be an ace with the Yankees. Imagine Quintana with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Like, he'd be their number one.
It'd be close, but yeah.
So he's really good. But I want to see him have a 15 to 18 win season.
Yes.
Get crazy and win 20. But like, I expect Kyle Hendricks to be 18 and 9, something like that, 2-1 win to loss. I think he doesn't give up a lot of home runs. I mean, I think Kyle Hendricks is a guy that can be a 2 ERA. He can win you 18 to 20 games, and he can win the Cy Young this year.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, I agree with you, but I'm saying he needs to go out and do that.
And I can say that about Darvish, and I can say that about Kyle Hendricks. I don't think anybody else. Now, I guess Jose Quintana could blow us away and be in those numbers. That would be amazing.
If they're getting that out of Quintana, look out. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that would be amazing. But I could also say that about everybody in that rotation except Gio Gonzalez in Washington.
Yeah.
Strasburg could do that. Scherzer, who's the opening day starter for the Curly W. He could easily do that.
Yeah.
But the Dodgers don't have Clayton Kershaw. I want to say that Clayton Kershaw can do that.
He's 30 years old, man.
But he's always hurt. Yeah. And he's going to miss a month because of his back. That's who Clayton Kershaw is. So my point is, I think the Cubs and the Nationals are going to duke it out. And I hope that we wind up seeing them in the National League Championship Series because I would love to see it. I would love to see both those teams 100% healthy.
Rematch, man.
And then I'd love to see them take on the Astros because Washington or Chicago against the Houston Astros in the World Series would be a phenomenal series.
Yeah.
It would be.
Totally agree.
Could you, like old NL Central rivals, the Cubs and the Astros, and That would be unbelievable. Yeah. Throwback uniforms in the World Series, those awful Houston Astro uniforms.
I love them. I think
they're
fired.
Those Cubs blue uniforms that, like, the sky blue uniforms with the pinstripes in them that my guy Leon Durham used to wear, number 10 at first base, the bull.
Now you're reminiscing.
Leon Durham was my favorite player as a kid. He really was. For more greatness like that, find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Hey, I'm going to switch gears real quick and talk some NBA. Because there's huge news out of Cleveland today.
The land.
The land. Tyronn Lue is no longer the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers because he's had a health issue going on all season long where he has chest pains. He has trouble sleeping, trouble breathing. At times, people are saying he's coughing up blood. But he feels such a responsibility to the ball club that he did not want to step away. Until now, when he feels like he cannot go on, it is detrimental to his well-being. Tyronn Lue today announced he's going to step away for what they think could be as little as a week, and Larry Drew is going to be the interim coach for LeBron James's team. Does it matter? How much of an impact does it have on the land?
Well, I think it could have a big impact, and I say that because I think a lot of times with athletes, just a different voice could make a huge change.
Yes.
Hearing the message from somebody else could make a big difference. And I think that's what you're hoping to accomplish. If Drew can come in with the same message but deliver it in a different tone, will that catch the ears of this team and fortify the team? You're getting Kevin Love back tonight.
Mm-hmm.
This could be an opportunity to have a lot of momentum rolling into the playoffs.
What do you expect from Kevin Love?
I think the first couple of games, he's just got to find his groove as an in-game flow. You know, a lot of players, most players, I would say, need to find their groove in the game, their flow in the game. I think he's got to find that again, and once he does, I think he'll be the same Kevin Love we know and love.
I think he's vitally important to them, and I feel like Kevin Love's a guy that LeBron really likes. I think Tyronn Lue's a guy that LeBron doesn't respect. He may like Ty Lue. He said a lot of nice things about Ty Lue at shoot-around today. I don't think he likes Tyronn Lue. Or respects him, excuse me. I don't think he respects him. And I think that's a big difference in the NBA today. I think Kevin Love will come back and give him some feel-goods. I think Kevin Love's going to come back and he's going to shoot 40% from the three-point line. And he's going to play unbelievable defense. And it is 5:30 Pacific time, and Kevin Love is 4 of 6 from three with 14 points.
There you go.
They're up 8 on the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's one of those things for LeBron James that the king is going to be comfortable. And when he's comfortable, he is just going to play better. He is going to share more. I wish he'd share less and attack the basket more like we've seen the last week. It's been spectacular, but they haven't won.
Sure.
Kevin Love's really important. Tyronn Lue is not. That's what I would say about it. Because 9 times out of 10, they do what LeBron wants to do. And whether Jordan Clarkson or Green or Hill or Korver or Larry Nance wants to do that, I don't know. But I think Tyronn Lue is way less important than Kevin Love.
And I think a lot of that goes to the fact that Ty Lue is really young. He's 40 years old. He's recently out of the league by coaching standards. And I think LeBron knows that he was obviously a better player than Ty Lue was, and I think he thinks he knows more than Ty Lue, which, again, I kind of would have to agree with. I think there a lot of times when guys like Kobe or LeBron want to lead the team, you need to let them lead the team. Ty Lue's job isn't to overtake LeBron. It's to find a way to bring everybody together in those huddles when he's drawing up plays, and that's his role on the team.
But you know that LeBron is much happier when, A, they're winning.
Of course.
B, he's calling the shots. And C, the game runs through him. There are large swaths of time. We saw it in the Bulls game. 2-3 possessions in a row where LeBron doesn't touch it. That happens. LeBron takes the ball, brings it up, puts on a crossover, and dunks it all over the Bulls. And then comes down and drives the lane, kicks, and Clarkson knocks down a three. Like, you can see that he just gets fed up with it, takes control of the game, and all of a sudden the Cavs are a better basketball team.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's rocket science. I mean, they're a better team. Any team would be a better team running their offense through a guy like LeBron James. It's not as though LeBron is, you know, restricted to playing down low or being a point guard.
Sure.
The guy can play any any position on the floor at any time. And I think that's why he, you know, he really affects the game the way, you know, a Magic Johnson did. He's so flexible in the way he plays. He's very free-flowing. So I don't know why you wouldn't run through him. It doesn't make sense.
Midway through the third, LeBron's 10 of 18, 23 points as we knock this podcast out.
Like, how many assists does he have now, right now, in
eight
the third
assists.
Quarter?
Eight
See, that's
assists.
What I mean. He's got 23 points
Six
and eight
rebounds.
Assists.
Yeah, I'm one steal.
The guy can do it all.
Yeah.
And we know that, but it just, when we're talking about them running their offense through LeBron James, how are you not running your offense through LeBron James?
Yeah, 18 assists on 31 made baskets. So, look, I think they're fine. Obviously, in the East, the way that division, that conference breaks down, they're going to make the playoffs. But if anybody thinks that the Cleveland Cavaliers can, hey, yeah, let them just finish eighth as the way we're in, and that they're going to make some deep run to the conference finals, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Because the East, say what you want about the East, this Toronto Raptor team, Boston, if I'm the Cavs, I'm trying to finish seventh because I think Boston is a wounded dog.
They're a much better matchup. There's no doubt about that. I mean, yeah. They were wounded dog since game one. You know, losing Hayward, they were already a wounded dog. You lose Kyrie's playing hurt. He announced that on a billboard to the league, essentially. And Marcus is not 100%. So I don't know. There's no question the Celtics are a better matchup.
And this is a huge game tonight, this Bucks-Cavs game, because the Cavs are three games back. They're in the seventh spot, and they're three games behind Cleveland in the third spot. It's half a game from third, fourth, and fifth, and then it's a game and a half to sixth. Like, this is so close in the East. The Cavs got to start winning four of five. They've got to go on a run here where they put themselves solidly, solidly in that third spot.
Yeah.
So that they wind up with Philadelphia. That's what I'm saying.
But like
that's a really tough match. If you're playing Philly, you damn well better have home court advantage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think while the West is far more talented as far as players go, I think the East is just as difficult when you factor in injuries. I mean, I know, you know, the Warriors are really injured right now, but everybody knows they're going to be good going into the playoffs. So I just think when you take into account the fact that LeBron James has had to deal with a lot this year, they've had to deal with essentially an entirely new roster, gelling those guys, you know, getting them to play together as one unit. And now we're talking about the fact that it's three games for the Bucks to catch the Cavs, you know, yeah, in the playoff picture. And so I think equally, when you compare the East to the West, there's different pressures on each team. And I think that's why this year, uniquely from years past, the East is just as difficult as the West, it seems. And I think that's fascinating.
Well, the West right now is fascinating. How the Lakers are playing, and now granted they've sputtered a little bit and they're in Indiana tonight, not looking so great, but the way the Lakers have developed, they're becoming a force. I look at the Western Conference very differently than I have. This Kevin Durant injury, he's out several weeks now with a fractured rib cartilage. So they're without Steph, Clay, they're without KD, so they're big three. And they're finding ways to get wins in Golden State, which I think is an absolute tip of the cap to Steve Kerr. Steve Molina, our Bear Down Steve guy on Twitter, would love to see Steve Kerr go to the University of Arizona once they fire Sean Miller now that Sweaty Sean's out.
So it is assumed.
Well, I would hope so. That Arizona fires Sean Miller?
Yeah.
I'd hope so. You would think so. But here, no, there. I look at the Western Conference, and I think Houston's untouchable. That team is, as of today, healthy, playing well, and James Harden's just unbelievable.
Is Gerald Green the guy, the dark horse of the West? Is he the guy that, is Gerald Green the Sean Livingston of the Rockets? Because what did he do the other night? And he came to Chris Paul's defense. And I think what that says is Gerald Green realizes he can be that guy. He can be the guy that gets ejected off the bench because he's not a starter.
21 minutes a game and having a phenomenal impact, Gerald Green.
Field day.
That's unbelievable.
He's having
man.
A field day from the three-point line. You know what? And this really speaks to where the league is, what the league has turned into. And we were talking about this earlier today. Gerald Green didn't used to be a three-point guy. He was not a shooter. What happened was is he got sent home.
Yeah.
He was chilling on the couch for 6 months and realized, hey, I'm a guard in this league, and I got to start shooting the three ball a lot better than I was. Dunking and having hops is no longer good enough in this in today's NBA.
Everybody can dunk in the NBA, bud.
Yeah, that's the truth, right? So what he realizes, okay, I need to get in the gym and I need to find range. I need to be able to shoot the ball consistently from 3-point land. And so now for the Rockets, yeah, you have Chris Paul, you have James Harden, you have Clint Capella, you have PJ Tucker. And then you've got this little guy over here on the bench, Gerald Green, who comes in and just lights it up for 20 minutes a night, and that's how they get to 120 points.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating is that the Utah Jazz listen to this show.
They do, clearly.
They're fifth in the West.
Hell yeah.
And this is what I've been saying for going on a month. And really, since this rejuvenation of the Jazz in middle to late January, Rudy Gobert got healthy. Donovan Mitchell, the rookie of the year, which I've been saying since December. Not to say I told you so, but hey, I told you so.
You have been, and I think Donovan Mitchell's play, his staying at the level of play that he's been at since we were kind of talking about that about 6 weeks ago, he's kind of cemented himself as the rookie of the year because I think his effect in games has been more than Ben Simmons.
Man, they have won 9 of 10. And really, 10 of 11. They're playing incredible basketball, and their one loss is to the Rockets. I don't even know how you explain how well they're playing. They're doing it with defense. They're holding teams to paltry offensive numbers. When you can hold the Pelicans under 100, with or without Boogie, when you hold the Indiana Pacers in Indiana to 84 points.
I mean, that's ridiculous. How is Quinn Snyder not the coach of the year?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, dominated the Magic, beat up on the Timberwolves. Like, all these teams that they shouldn't beat the Blazers. They should not be beating the Spurs. Oh, by the way, they are, and they're better than those teams.
They're doing exactly what the Blazers have done. I mean, the Blazers and the Jazz have run parallel for the last 10 to 15 games. And I think now, last year, and I referenced this last week, but last year you and I were doing this show talking about how they were battling the Clippers and battling the Grizzlies for 5, 6, and 7 seed in the West. And the Jazz tanked. They fell off. They were not able to secure the 5th seed. This year they're going to secure that 5th seed.
I think Rudy Gobert took this team on his back the day that Gordon Hayward announced in Boston. Because he put out a bunch of tweets and Rudy Gobert just did not care. And Dennis Lindsay, as much as I have talked about how they've missed in the draft, Dennis Lindsay's deal to get Donovan Mitchell is one of the great deals of the year. And if Donovan Mitchell can stay healthy, he put an Instagram post up today of a shot of him sitting on top of the hill above Salt Lake City and said, man, I love this place. And it's like, who the hell is this guy? Who is Donovan Mitchell who just fell off of a truck and landed in Salt Lake City on the way through? Like, Donovan Mitchell is a godsend to the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Donovan Mitchell is what everyone thought Dante Exum was going to be.
And what the hell? What is Ricky Rubio doing?
Well, you know what Ricky Rubio's doing? He's being Ricky Rubio. He's being a distributor. He is now not asked to score. That's Donovan Mitchell's job.
Yeah.
Ricky Rubio just needs to feed. That's all he's got to do. Feed Jay Crowder. Feed Donovan Mitchell.
And how about Jay Crowder? I don't know what happened to Jay Crowder in that vacation he took in the land, but he was not good for Cleveland.
That was a big vacation then.
Yeah, but he's been phenomenal for the Jazz. And I just love it. I love that a team that is constantly forgotten about, that is constantly maligned, it's Utah. It's just Jazz. It's just the Mormons. Don't worry about it.
There's no nightlife there. We don't want to go there.
There's no soul food there. Come on. And all of a sudden, here they are, just dominating people, winning 10 of 11 with little old Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and Jay Crowder.
Aren't they one of the few teams in the league now? And I can't really think of another team that does this, but they're one of the few teams, if not the only team, that can suffocate teams defensively.
Yeah.
You don't really see that in the NBA anymore. This is a scorers league, not a defensive league.
Because they have no fear in guarding the 3-point line.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about getting beat off the dribble when you have the premier rim protector in the NBA in Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about it, so you can push up to the line with a hand up and take away that three. That's why they're so scary if you are a team like the Golden State Warriors. Because you live and die by the three ball. That's what this league has become, and I think it's not a good thing. If in the NBA today, if you can't shoot the three, Gerald Green, you're not going to have a career. Well, the Jazz said, yeah, go ahead, shoot the three, because we're going to make that really difficult. And by the way, the three is already a low percentage shot. You miss it. If you're elite, you miss it 60% of the time you shoot it.
Yeah.
So good luck. We're going to have a hand up on you, and we're going to take your feet away.
Yeah.
That's why they're so good, because if you want to take them off the dribble, they've got a premier guy behind you. And Derek Favors, for a lot of the things he does not do, he is a work-hard guy on defense. And I'm telling you, their speciality has become the three-point, guarding the three-point line and letting Rudy, funneling the play, funnel the basketball to Rudy Gobert, and good things happen.
Yeah.
And it's working for him. So I love the Western Conference, but if you give up on the East and you stop watching the East the last 3 weeks of the season, you're a fool.
Yeah.
Because Kevin Love is back and he's balling tonight, which I think is very good for the Cavs and very good for the Eastern Conference. And somewhere along the way, by the way, I actually started rooting for LeBron James, and I'm
you
not sure where this
happened.
You
were yelling the other night when they were playing the Bulls and the Cavs. I think it was like 97, 94, and LeBron had some ridiculous alley-oop, and
no,
you just freaked out.
The driving kick to Jordan Clarkson. The driving kick where Clarkson made it in the corner and got fouled.
Yes, the four-point play.
Yes. It was a great play. Watching LeBron James is good. It's fun. I love basketball. It's like watching great... I love baseball. I'm a passionate baseball fan. There's nothing like it. And that's why when you watch LeBron James dunk all over those damn Portland Trailblazers, if you don't get aroused by that, there's something wrong with you. If you need Stormy Daniels, just give me LeBron James dunking on the Blazers. I'm good.
Right.
I said Stormy... Anyway.
I appreciate it.
See, the point is... You know, anyway, let's talk about a little self-driving car action, because one of our non-sports stories today is an obsession that I frankly don't understand. And if you do, I'd love to hear from you on this. Why do we need self-driving cars? Help me. Somebody help me understand this, because I don't get it. Why do we need self-driving cars? Well, Uber thinks we do, because Uber has a fleet of self-driving vehicles that still have a driver in the driver's seat, but the car drives itself. We see them all the time, all over Arizona.
We see them every day.
Yeah, all over Arizona, Tempe, Scottsdale. You just see them everywhere that Uber generally tests these things. You know what they look like. When we're in Arizona, we see them with an Uber. It's a big Uber. It's a Volvo SUV.
It's
got all kinds of equipment all over it.
You
can't miss it. You can't miss it. Anyway, so apparently a woman crossed the street outside of a crosswalk and got run over by a self-driving Uber that was in autonomous mode, which means the car was driving itself. The woman died. So now Uber has parked all of its self-driving cars while an investigation goes on.
Smart move.
But why do we need self-driving cars? This is a little interesting to me. And we were talking about this on Twitter today. Blake Powers made a really good point on Twitter. Blake Powers at Blake Hypnosis. Blake Hypnosis is his name. No kidding.
Okay.
He says to me, jump in a car at midnight, lay the seat back, wake up in California. That's the only reason I'd want one. Wasn't that called a jet plane? Isn't that why we get on an aeroplane?
Not everybody's affording jet planes.
But you can afford a self-driving car? Because those are cheaper than an airline ticket.
Well, look, I think auto drive is not just for Teslas and Volvos. You're seeing a lot of other people start to develop it and get into it. And I think once companies like Volvo have it, and then Mercedes has it, and then Beamer's got it, and then you're going to see it go to Ford, and then it's just going to trickle down the line. And eventually, every car is going to have the option to do it. My point is, I'm a driving enthusiast. I would never want the car to drive itself because I love to drive. I don't need it, and I would never pay for it. Now, if it came along, okay, that might be nice. I might allow the car to drive itself along the 8 on the Mexican border on the way to California. I might allow it to do that on the freeway.
Lamborghini.
But I'm not freaking doing it in the heart of Tempe where there's a bunch of college kids or a lot of people that cross the street. I'm not doing that. There's no point. It's risky.
Yeah, no. If I want a self-driving something, I'm getting on a plane. And I'm flying to wherever I'm going. Sorry, I don't get this. I don't see the need to have a self-driving car. Are you that lazy? Is your time that valuable?
The only application I could see it really being effective is for elderly people who drive. We drive around a lot of elderly people in Arizona.
We do.
And I think it's at a certain point, people get to an age where they shouldn't be driving. And I think everybody can relate to this. And no. there is a point where you're driving so slow that it's not safe. And I know that's odd, and I know it doesn't happen a lot, but we actually see it here in Arizona a lot.
Daily.
Where people are driving so slow that it's actually dangerous.
And it causes accidents.
It does. And so I think at that point, I think it could be really useful if there was an application where elderly folks could jump in the car, hey, take me to Target. It'll drive them at the speed limit to Target, and they don't got to worry about it.
I don't need it. I don't need that. Call an Uber. That's not self-driving. That's what this is about. Uber wants to corner technology and make money, which I guess is what we all want. I get it.
Right.
We don't need this. It really bothers me that everything has to be about convenience and profit. Look at this Facebook hack that came out with the election and, you know, Trump's campaign and Steve Bannon. With this Cambridge thing where they essentially what happened is they stole tens of millions of Facebook profile data information.
Right.
And used that data to manipulate what people were seeing. And they're calling it electronic brainwashing, trying to get you to vote for one candidate. In this case, it was Donald Trump or another. And Facebook knew about it and did nothing about it. And then when a guy blew the whistle over the weekend, they terminated his Facebook account. And now all of a sudden it's spin control. Facebook lost 7% of its value today on the Dow. Their director of security resigned. Like, it's just all this stuff. And I'm just saying to myself, hey, do I really need Facebook in my life?
But again, and I'm always the one that brings this up on the show. This is a generational problem. Right, so your generation doesn't need Facebook, and your generation's burnt out on Facebook.
How often do you use Facebook?
Daily.
Okay, all the time. Do I. Like 3-4 times a day? How many times are you on Facebook?
I would say 3 to 5 times a day at least. I think for me, like, I'm part of a car group on Facebook. I have a lot of friends in the area on Facebook, so I use it to reach people, you know. And I think Facebook is particularly useful if you want to connect with somebody, but let's say you don't want them to have your phone number or you don't want them to have certain information about
you. Why can't you use Instagram? Which, by the way, is owned by Facebook.
You could use Instagram.
I use Instagram every day. Like, my two things, I'm a huge tweeterer. I tweet a ton. I'm a huge Twitter dude. The tweet machine.
In the land.
Yes, I am on Twitter all the time. And I am on Instagram all the time. Everything from shoes and droning and...
Well, I think Instagram is by far the leader in social media right now. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Snapchat blows. I've given up on Snapchat because of all the changes they've made that I think suck.
Yeah.
So I don't use Snapchat. I haven't used Snapchat probably in 2 months.
Yeah.
But I'm all over Instagram. I'm all over Twitter. And I'm finding myself on Facebook less and less. And I really only use Facebook when I want to connect, when I want to see what my brother and his kids are doing or stuff like that. I use LinkedIn probably just as much as I use Facebook. Like, I'll read stories on my LinkedIn newsfeed. I've had enough of the BS.
Well, I feel like the only reason it's bothering you now is because of the leaked information. I think before it was just an annoyance.
Well, no, it started with the election, though. Let's be honest about it. My wife freaked out and, like, just gave up, deleted Facebook off her phone.
But to preface this conversation about her, I would say that she's somebody who is different viewed about social media.
But, and I agree with you on that, but damn if my wife Britt wasn't right.
Because
what did she say? Oh, they're all lying. This can't be true. They're blind. Scout's honor, which I am not. Scout's honor. Scout's honor, which I am not. I'm telling you, my wife nailed it. She said, everybody's lying on Facebook. They're putting up all this radical stuff that I know is not true, and I'm tired of seeing it. And a year later, she was proven right. And she's done with Facebook. Now, the funny part is she's actually gotten back on Facebook because she's got a bunch of nieces and everybody's young and growing up. But she was absolutely right. She took a whole 18 months off of Facebook, like just forgot it existed. And I give her kudos because she saw it way before anybody else did. Facebook is just an annoyance now. It's that little fly that buzzes around your ear.
It's not that for me. I think that may be the case for you, but that's not the case for me. I think what they did in this hack, in this data breach, is they took advantage of people's laziness to get into the article fully. What people do on Facebook, and I find myself doing this on Facebook occasionally too, I'll admit it. What you do is you scroll through your Facebook feed, and you'll see, like, Business Insider, let's say, will put up a Facebook ad, and it'll have some kind of provocative headline. It'll say, Dodge is no longer making the Viper, and people get all fired up because the Viper is no longer being made. But really, that's not true. They're not going to make, you know, the Viper. They're going to stop making the Viper like 18 months from now, and the headline fooled you. And so I think this breach, and if you believe that the Russians had an effect on all this, the Russians wanted Trump to get elected, and so they took advantage of that, and they realized, hey, we can use this to influence the election.
But what they did is they highlighted. It's almost like the Dark Knight. Not even kidding. It's almost like the Dark Knight. They fed on people's insecurities, and they knew people were lazy, right? So
yes.
We tried as a society to believe that we were better than that. Right. Think about what this is probably a huge reach, right? Harvey Dent and the Batman.
Yes.
And Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
They wanted to be these three idyllic guys, right? And they believed in people.
Yes.
Well, the Russians believed in Americans, that we were lazy and we didn't follow through and we believed everything and we were gullible. And they put it out there and it worked. And what bothers me so much is this goes back to, why do people use Farmville? Why do people have to, if you do not repost this on your page, look at this beautiful picture of Jesus Christ holding a bird.
Yeah.
If you do not put this on your page, Jesus will not bless you for the next 12 months and your legs will turn blue and fall off.
Yeah.
If you do, you'll become a millionaire.
Yeah.
Post this now and then share it and tag 900 friends or you will die. And people are like, oh, I don't have 900 friends. I only have 850.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing? People believe that. People believed everything that was put out there. I have no idea if there was collusion with Trump and the Russians. I don't know.
But that's not what we're mad about. We're not mad about that.
But here's the point. You know what I do know? Is that I've heard all about this collusion. And I've heard all about the Russians. And I've heard all about Kushner. And I've heard all about Farmville. And now I can't trust any of it because it's a bunch of BS. So I don't know what to believe. So now, I guess for better or for worse, I got to fold back into myself and say, well, I'm going to read this story. And I'm a voracious reader. I read all kinds of stuff every day. I spend hours reading. So I trust myself to say, nah, you know what? This walks like a duck and it talks like a duck. And it crapped all over my grass and it swims in my pool. So it talks like a duck and it probably is a duck. And Sean Miller's probably cheating because he sweats through his shirts at Arizona. But that's what Facebook has become to me. So I have less value on it. You know why I like Instagram? Because I don't get stories about collusion in the Russians.
It's simple.
Yeah.
It's basic.
Wow. Look at her cleavage. Those are great workout pants.
Look at that Lamborghini.
Thank you, Lululemon. I love you. Look at that Aventador.
Yeah.
Look at that BMW.
Yeah.
Look at those great shoes. Well, hey, look at LeBron working out.
And I think the biggest difference between, if I had to boil it down, the biggest difference between Facebook and Instagram is that Instagram allows you to just see into people's lives the way they want you to see it. Facebook can be manufactured and manipulated.
I would agree with that. And it just is, it's just one of those things that... I don't know. Facebook annoys me. I wish that we were all more disciplined about what we believe and don't believe. By the way,
Yeah.
Are you still interested in the NCAA tournament? I know we're an hour into this show now. We haven't talked NCAA tournament
by
design.
I'm not, you know this about me, right? And the listeners should know, I'm not a huge college guy. I like when guys like Sean Miller get roasted on the stove, right? That's entertaining to me. I
you
think
do.
It's fascinating that all the top dogs got knocked off this year for the most part. And now you have a couple, and now we're talking about reseeding in the round of 16. There's not a great story, in my opinion. There's not a great reason to watch it. I still find myself following Lindsey Vonn and why she's rooting for Tiger as opposed to getting deep into the tournament and who's where.
Yeah, I actually like the tournament that not all the big names are involved in it. I kind of like when the smaller schools come through. And thank God Michigan State and Tom Izzo are out because they're a disgrace.
We'll see ya.
We'll talk about that tomorrow on the show. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about Shohei Ohtani going to AAA, which I hope happens tomorrow. But whatever. Anyway, follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.